Federal Drive is presented by GEHA, Government Employees Health Association, proudly providing health and dental benefits to federal employees and their families. Visit GEHA.com.
The General Services Administration is putting the final touches on its solicitation for the big Alliant 3 IT services contract. One section already finished, though, is a new approach to attracting small businesses with new technology. Federal News Network's Jason Miller joins me with what he's learned. And let's start, Jason, with a brief reminder here. What exactly is Alliant 3, and why is there so much excitement about this long-awaited deal from industry?
There is a lot of excitement going across the government contracting sector. And Tom, obviously, Alliant 3 is the follow-up to, of course, Alliant 2, which has been the government-wide acquisition contract, the GWAC for IT services that's been around now for pushing probably 15 or 20 years. And I think the reason why there's so much excitement around Alliant 3, which is going to really cover a broad swath of IT services, is because of how well Alliant 2 has done and the popularity among agencies. Now, GSA data shows agencies obligated more than $8.6 billion across 117 task orders in 2023 alone. And in fact, it got so popular that in 2022, back in August of that time, of that year, GSA increased the ceiling of Alliant 2 to $75 billion from $50 billion because it saw just how much the spending trends were going up to that $50 billion ceiling. I did a little bit of quick math, and since GSA awarded Alliant 2 in 2018, agencies have obligated more than $26 billion. Now, of course, Tom, obligation is not the same as spent, but that's a lot of money to be going through this contract. And it has been, in many ways, the go-to contract for many major and high-dollar programs agencies have pursued over the last 3 or 4 years. In fact, the average task order under Alliant 2 is about $120 million. Now, the expectation for Alliant 3 is to be just as popular. There's a lot of spending expected to go through it, and I think a lot of vendors and agencies are following this closely.
All right, and you've been looking at the Alliant 3 provision for promoting small businesses that also have emerging technology. And what is GSA saying there?
As part of the draft solicitation for Alliant 3 that GSA issued last December, there were a lot of details about this new approach really to hold large businesses, or what they call other than small businesses, because they just can't call everybody large for some reason, Tom, accountable for learning about small businesses in specific emerging technology areas. Now, GSA detailed areas such as big data, cloud, cyber, AI, zero trust, quantum computing as some of those 11 areas. And what the Small Business Emerging Technology Solutions engagement requires is for that large business to meet with at least 5 small businesses who work in one of these 11 areas. Now, these 11 emerging technology areas came from GSA's IT category office that has been looking at this and continues to do so. Now, Paul Bowen is the director of the Center for GWAC Programs at GSA. He describes how this evaluation factor will work.
Meet with them. Have them sign a form that, hey, we met, we had an engagement, we spoke, we talked, we got a little mojo going. Have them sign it. They have to provide the proof of, yes, they have the eligible product. And then when Paulco, the other than small business offerer, submits it, I would receive 200 points for each of the 5 engagements up to a total maximum of 1,000 points.
Now, Bowen was speaking at the IAC event last Friday. He says GSA isn't being prescriptive about how these engagements should work or what may or may not come from them.
Now, GSA does not dictate how these meetings are set up, how long they last, the terms of them. It's entirely between for you to all figure out how you want to do it, to come to a terms with each other, whether it's a phone call, whether it's a meeting, whether it's a demonstration, however you work it out. You work it out. There's no expectation that you will have done business in the past, nor does it create an obligation in GSA's eyes that you'll do business together in the future. It's a way to matchmake.
And I think, Tom, this is really important because matchmaking is something that agencies push through these big contracts all the time. So for GSA to be like, hey, you will make this happen with at least 5,
sure.
I think that's a really important thing. GSA did put some parameters on the size of the emerging small businesses. They have to have at least done $100,000 worth of business or be part of the SBIR STTR program. And, Tom, real quick, one thing that was brought up at this ACT IAC event on Friday is, how does it work, right? They want the businesses kept asking questions. So let me just try to put a little bit of clarity around this. Large businesses can only get credit for meeting with different small businesses on five engagements. So you can't just meet with the same small business five times and say, well, they do cloud, they do cyber, they do health IT. So you can only go to the same category, again, whether it's cloud, cyber, AI, whatever, more than two times. So you, that's your limit. And that means you got to meet, if I meet with Tom Temin and Associates, a small business in AI, I can only meet with you for AI, and then I can only meet with XYZ small business on AI, and then I'm done with AI. I got to go to the other areas. And I think that's how you earn your 1,000 points. Now, small businesses who are bidding on Alliant 3 do not have to participate in this way. They automatically receive that 1,000 points. But again, they could be convinced to do it if they want to, but they're already going to receive that 1,000 points as
sure.
part of their evaluation.
Sounds like a cross between the dating game and concentration or something, the way they're doing it. And why did GSA or how did they come up with this particular approach? And I have a follow-up question on the SBIR question, but how do they come up with this approach?
I think there's several reasons why GSA is taking this approach. I think the first is it's pretty easy, right? It just makes sense for small businesses to match make as part of the evaluation. It just made sense.
We know that small businesses have really been leaders in emerging technology, which is such a focus for everyone, including the government. And for us to have an evaluated factor where other than small business offers on Alliant 3 have a scored element where they can go out and meet with small businesses with emerging technology solutions is a win-win for everyone. It's a win-win for the small businesses with the emerging technology because they have the ability to go meet with these companies where previously it may have been difficult to get in the door. So, and it's a win for the other than small business offers because they get to learn about these technologies and they demonstrate to the government that they have the ability to go out and find small businesses with emerging technology because so much of the emerging technology is being done at, you know, almost the garage level and above at this point.
And again, that's GSA's Paul Bowman. My question, Jason, is if a company is under a SBIR agreement, those often are by other transaction authority, not FAR procurements. Does that interfere with Alliant 3 in any way?
It does not, because what they're doing is just saying, hey, here's a company that it's an actual company using the SBIR, the STTR agreement that you have with the government, just shows that, hey, you're real. You're not just, again, two people in a garage who have never
sure.
done business with the government. And also there's the SBIR phase one is only, I think, $75,000. So it doesn't meet that $100,000 threshold, that minimum. But it's good enough for the government, so to speak, because they are part of this bigger program and have been shown that they can do some of this work.
Right. It's almost a qualifier.
Exactly. And I think this is really important because, Tom, this is maybe the first time that this type of small business matchmaking has ever been used as an evaluation factor in the procurement. Now, it's not a huge evaluation factor. Alliant 3 may have 30,000 points or some crazy amount. So it's 1,000 points. But I think that push that Bowman's talking about is really giving small businesses some leverage with the larger firms, at least to get
sure.
meetings and at least to begin that explanation of what they do and how they do it.
And real quick, Jason, what is the timeline for GSA to release the request for proposals themselves?
So GSA says third quarter of this year. And guess what, Tom? We're in the third quarter of this year. So
I've
any
noticed.
Day now. But really, Bowman said we're looking at really end of May, early June timeframe. And I think the one big change folks should know about Alliant 3 versus Alliant 2 is the number of awards GSA is targeting, about 76 vendors in all. Now, this is a pretty big increase over the 60 awards that GSA made under Alliant 2. Part of the reason why they want to add more is there's been 22 vendors who have left Alliant 2 since 2018, 11 to mergers and acquisitions, and 11 have been, Tom will say, voluntold to leave the contract versus being kicked off because they didn't meet some specific bidding or winning requirements
sure.
under Alliant 2. So now there's only 38 vendors, and GSA is worried about competition, so more the better.
Federal News Network's Jason Miller, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
And be sure to check out his story at federalnewsnetwork.com. And this program note, for Earth Day, celebrated all week, check out the Energy Strategy Series, a special daily presentation of ideas for transforming the nation's energy infrastructure. Sign up at WTOP.com.
Leadership today, especially within the federal workforce, is being tested more than ever before. As the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's Chief People Officer, Elizabeth Comstetter sees a focus on people as absolutely crucial to her leadership style. Comstetter joined Shane Canfield, WEPA CEO, to reflect on her years of experience leading in the federal human capital space.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Elizabeth Comstetter, Chief People Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
In your current position at CISA, one of your responsibilities is ensuring a people-first culture. Explain what that is, and what's the role of leadership in creating and shaping that culture?
Yes, at CISA, really paramount to our culture is a people-first driven aspect, so that we are really looking at how do we accomplish our mission through our people. And in order to do that, we really value our people. We want them to feel empowered and supported and respected, and also that their managers care about them. So well-being is important. Psychological safety in the workplace is important, so that all voices and ideas are heard. So I like to call it our North Star. Having a people-first culture really starts with the people in order to get our incredibly difficult mission accomplished. In terms of leadership, which is a great question, I think we all know that culture is really driven by leadership and the behaviors that we allow and we reinforce in our leaders. So we really work at making sure that our leaders are bringing out the best in their people every day. So again, that they feel they can bring their voice, especially an opinion that might not go along with the majority of a group, so that we get that diverse perspective. We get those different ideas and experiences. And that's really where we find that it's important that leaders are purposefully bringing out their talent on their teams to enable our mission.
Yeah, excellent. We're going through a culture project at our work.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's been 6 months in the making, and it's going really well, but it is work.
Yes.
And it requires from the top down. So I'm also involved in that. I hear you.
Great.
Throughout your career, you've piloted many different talent management programs, including at NASA, the CIA, the FBI, just to name a few, and you have an amazing career. What have you learned, or how have you might have changed along the way in creating and leading those programs?
Yes, and I am so honored to have had a career in public service across multiple federal agencies, always in the realm of human resources and workforce performance. And I think because I study organizations and people in them, I've come to realize, particularly in the federal government, that many of our programs are really grounded in the industrial era thinking, that this is organizationally structured in a hierarchy with boxes and lines on charts, with the center being around jobs and what do we need to get this job done in terms of skills and training. And what I found is that we're really not in the industrial era anymore, where we would promote the smartest people who knew that work, and they would then tell the people on their team how to do things and oversee that work. We're now in a digital era and the information era, where work gets done collaboratively across geographic boundaries and certainly across org charts. So we like to call it networks or hierarchies, and we really need to, again, unleash people so they can find those other people who are working on similar problems or have the right ideas. And so I really like to think of our work now in the talent programs being human-centered. It's more about the user and the experience than about the rules and regulations. So although we have to have rules and regulations, certainly in human resources, is that person experiencing what they need and getting what they need for their role at that time? So not so much on the job, but on the person. So for example, we're recruiting. What's the applicant experiencing? Because if they're not having a good experience with our organization from the time we're recruiting them, they're going to go work for somebody else. Same thing with like first-time supervisors. We know they need certain training, but telling them to sit in a class for 1 week and then hope a year from now they'll remember what they learned to apply, that's not really human-centered. The human-centered is what do they need when they need it, and building modules or just-in-time training and bringing that to the people, to that user, as they need it. So that's really, I think, the most important focus of talent programs today in this era to enable the workers to be the best they can be in their roles.
Excellent. New thinking. This is always an interesting question. Has there been a time when, as a leader, that you've made a mistake? And what is that? And I think most important, what did you take away from that? What did you learn from that?
Well, I kind of chuckle because I think as leaders, we have to learn to recognize our mistakes, admit our mistakes, and that they are opportunities to learn. And so I've had to do my own self-reflection on making mistakes and when things don't turn out the way that I expected them to. Makes me think of a time when I was at the Transportation Security Administration and I was a supervisor. And I was really embroiled with my program. I was the technical leader of it. I understood it. I'd run it for years. And I was making a briefing for a decision that had to be made about this program that was very near and dear to me. And I presented the briefing to one of the very senior people in the agency. And I think there are about 20 people in the room. And I had gone through the briefing, answered all the questions. And that leader then said, okay, I'm going to go around the room and get everybody's opinion. And then everybody gets to vote, which kind of set me aback because there were people in that room that didn't have any technical knowledge about my program. She even turned to the executive assistant there, taking notes on the meeting, and said, go ahead, and I want to hear from you. And I realized in hindsight, I had stopped listening. I had been in transmitting all of my knowledge and what I saw to be the right way, and I was not listening to different perspectives in the room because I didn't think that, I didn't value that they were bringing any kind of input to this particular decision. And it didn't go as I had hoped. And I left very disappointed and was busy blaming the senior leader and how that meeting was conducted, that she let all these people have opinions when they didn't know, in my mind, didn't know what they were talking about. And so in reflection on that, I realize, and now as I've moved into more senior leadership positions, I realize that was a mistake, that it actually is really important to listen, especially to people who have different perspectives or at a different point in the career, not just the people who know the program or the technical really well. And so that was a mistake I made, and I realized in my own sense I wasn't listening to very different opinions, and I probably should have because I would have learned more about what was needed for this program going forward than just leaving, getting upset that it didn't go a certain way. So I've really practiced active listening. I've practiced making sure there's very different people on teams and certainly on committees or councils, that we need early careers, people new to the agency, people who haven't walked in the shoes of the technical workforce, because they're asking questions we need to hear for these programs to be successful.
Excellent. Your career in talent management means your work is very closely tied to people. And even your title, Chief People Officer, what does that mean to you to be a leader in the federal system with that focus?
Isn't that a great title? I just love the title Chief People Officer, and I think it's my dream job, really, to be focused on people and culture and the workforce strategy for the whole agency. And I'm just so excited to be at CISA at this point in time. We're only 4 years young as an agency, so we're really still creating who we're going to become as an agency and what is our culture and what kind of people and talent do we need to be sure we have to be successful. So it's very exciting for me to be in this role with a intentional focus on culture. Because it's one of those things, if you leave it to chance and you kind of hope it goes the way you want it to, it probably won't. So by building programs, including leadership development programs, including any kind of training and learning and career growth and engagement programs and listening programs, that's what's really key for, I think, for our agency and particularly me in this role. I think in the federal government, we got used to doing annual survey, the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey that OPM, Office of Personnel Management, runs every year. So we would do a survey and we'd read it and we'd say, oh, this is the opinion of our people. And then we would do action plans and then we'd roll out certain activities that we would hope would increase engagement. In this era, you can't do once a year and understand what your employees' experiences are, what they need, what's working well, and what needs to improve. We need active, ongoing listening programs. So one of the things we're doing at CISA is having more pulse surveys, having more focus groups and what we call sensing sessions, expecting our leaders to have office hours where anybody can come and just talk about what's going well, what do they need, how are things going, because we feel like it is an ongoing need to hear from our people. And I think in this role and over the years of serving, I've also realized there's never a one-size-fits-all. You know, we think certain people need certain things at certain times in their career. There's no one-size-fits-all. Neither can we also customize everything to every individual. So there's got to be a sweet spot in building really great talent programs, but also, like I said, thinking about, can we do this in modules? Can we make it a menu? Can we do it just in time as people need it so they can practice the new skill or knowledge in their role? So I think we have such great opportunity, again, with the technology that enables us to really focus on how we connect people with their work and their team to get things done in very new ways.
This is always an interesting question. Is there a figure, either from your personal life, your past, somewhere in history generally, that inspired you, your leadership style, how you view leadership?
There are many figures who have been very inspirational to me, but there is one that sticks out, and that's my mother, Paula Brownlee, who has been a very inspiring leader to me all my life. And I think because, first and foremost, she had a strong family and a strong career, and that's something I always wanted. And I saw her first as my mother, but then I also saw her as a leader in her career and in academia, which was her chosen field. But I always knew her family came first. And as I saw how she balanced different family needs with also a growing and more prominent career positions in leadership, that she had to balance that. And I think I learned from her that you can have both. You have to focus on different things through your career and through your life, but that you don't have to trade one for the other. I've been married, happily married, for 32 years, and I'm a mother of twins who are almost 24 years old. So, and I've had a great career in public service. So I think that having her as a role model has really helped me find my own courage, find my own confidence, and find my own voice in how I can prioritize the things that are most important to me so that I can actually balance both family and career.
And you're doing it well. You're, Thank you. Having known you now for 7 or 8 years, and work alongside you, your passion is infectious.
Thank you.
Your intelligence and the thoughtfulness with which you approach all of these issues, it's an honor for you to be here, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm Shane Canfield, CEO at WEPA, and until next time, have a great day.
Find the full podcast and future episodes of Lessons in Leadership on the Federal News Network app and anywhere you enjoy your podcasts.